Welcome to Radical Remembering with psychologist Dr. Narissa Williams. This is a weekly conversation where we explore ways we've internalized oppression and consider what it really means to live liberated. Each episode would leave you with intimate knowledge of the liberation process, sprinkle a little healing magic, and leave you with wisdom for your journey. As you get settled in for today's episode, please make sure to like and subscribe. And if you've liked what you heard at the end, please share. So welcome to another episode of Radical Remembering. We are here with Marva Richards today. I'm excited to speak to you, Marva. So I guess first I'll start with telling the audience why, how we met and why I would like for you to why I asked you to talk. So I do a show on the network narrative.com on Sundays called Wisdom and Wellness. And Marva commented months ago, actually, I think it was over the summertime, on one of the links for the show or whatever. And I don't know, I just really liked your energy from then. And you started talking about restorative justice. And I was like, that's what I'm talking about, restorative justice. And even from then, I know we talked a little after that, but from that first interaction, I was like, okay, when I get back up with the podcast, I'm going to invite you. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful to be here. I'm practicing. I have this practice that I've been doing for years now, which is a gratitude practice. Mm-hmm. And I'm always saying thank you for the ounce, for the this, for the that, for everything. So I am just always looking at what is it that is in front of me that I should be grateful for. And I'm grateful for you. Of course, I'm grateful. I acknowledge Narrative and Nubia as the space that brought us together. So I want to acknowledge that as well. Yes. But I'm really grateful. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. What we also found that we have in common is, as you all know, you can hear Marva's accent. Accent characteristic of Trinidad and Tobago, and you all probably have heard me before say that my family is from Trinidad as well. So I hear you, and I hear it. It's so sing-song. I think I told you this before. Like sometimes I could be like just closing my eyes to hear you talk because it just feels so much like home for me. So like comforting for me. So we also have that in common too.
And you know, I don't even hear it myself. You don't hear yourself,
right?
Because I always talk like how I talk with the nouns and the pronouns in place most of the time and so on and so on. I've always talked like that. So I had no need to change anything. So therefore my accent never changed since I've been living here for so many years, but I've never felt as though I had to switch anything.
And so
I don't hear myself anymore. So when people tell me, first of all, people ask me, where are you from? Then I know, I sound. This is my sound.
But we never have an accent to ourselves, right? Yeah. I don't think that I have, I know that I have an accent, but it's context dependent. It's when I'm in this country or that country or the other, but we never think of ourselves. It's the other person that has.
Right.
So, but anyway, I love that concentric circle that we share so many concentric circles that we share. So can we start with talking about restorative justice? What is restorative justice?
So it's a set of practices. They're loosely based on the indigenous idea that people should not be thrown away. Mm-hmm. So that everybody in the community is valuable, even those that cause harm. And so loosely, and these practices have been sort of popularized since the 1970s in the Western world, well, in America. But these practices are used a lot in the justice system, in K-12 schools, and it's the idea of repairing harm, but while centering the people or the persons that have been harmed, actually calling back the person who did harm to be accountable and to find a way to repair that harm and then integrate that person hopefully back into the community so you don't throw them away. Mm-hmm. And if you think of what Bryan Stevenson has said, that you are not the worst thing that you've ever done, mm-hmm. it's kind of like bringing people to the understanding that, okay, you've done something wrong. you may not be a bad person. So let's correct and repair what it is that you've done wrong and who you've harmed. And then let's go on from there so that you can, you know, be sort of reintegrated back into yourself and into the community.
I love it. What about restorative justice appealed to you when you heard of it?
So I think I've been having this kind of restorative mind for a long time. So my background is in education and public health. So I've spent a lot of years in education with K through 12, and also within medical schools, you know, helping to teach medical students the social determinants of health, so that when they become doctors, they understand who this person is that is in front of them. That is not a disease that's in front of them. It's a person with a whole history and a whole story, and that they should understand that story. So with that background of being an educator and being somebody who's interested in the community and the impact of the community on the person and the person's well-being, it sort of aligns, restorative justice sort of aligns with all of that, you know? So it's all about what makes a person whole.
Yeah.
And what makes a community whole? And what's the relationship between a person who is integrated in the community and that community to them and all of that? So all of these things sort of made me aware that. And also I had this habit of when I was working, so I'm now retired recently. I call myself rewired, not retired. And so when I was in the academy, in the institution, what used to happen is that people, not just medical students, but, you know, staff, people used to just knock on my door, come into my office, close the door, sit down and go, can I talk to you? And so I have this sort of, I don't know, space for people so that I can listen. And I think that is part of, you know, the practice of restorative justice, sort of making sure that you open space for people to be able to tell their story so that they themselves, and I'm not a psychologist, I never studied psychology in the sense that you are a clinical psychologist. So I am not trying to actively heal people necessarily, but just making space so that people can actually hear themselves think, if you will, you know? And I found those principles really embedded in restorative justice. And when I had the opportunity to train and get certified, I said, you know what, let me do that and carry this, all of these, this accumulation of practice that I have into that. So I mentioned the rewirement as a point of not entry into restorative justice, but a continuation of what I've been trying to do all along.
Yeah, I think there's so many directions I want to go, but I like this point of rewirement. I like that reframe first and foremost. But I also like how continuously you've thought of your life in that way, because we think of rewirement, that period in our life, as like, you know, as a discontinuous part of the rest of our life. Like it's something so separate. But how could you separate yourself from the whole thread of your existence?
Right. Right. And how can you not integrate all of the life that you've lived up to that point into whatever it is that's coming, you know, or whatever it is you decide to do? Some people, you know, whatever they decide to do, everything that you've lived up to that point feeds into the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And it should inform anything that you're doing. Hopefully, you know, body, mind, and spirit is, you know, is part of the wellness work that we're all doing.
Yeah.
That we can live, you know, vivaciously and juicily is what I say, so that you can, you know, really activate all of the wisdom that you've accumulated up to this point. But if you have done that, I think you're blessed, first of all, and that's why I'm always, you know, in this gratitude practice. And then the next thing is, okay, so how can I use this to make the place, you know, whatever space I'm in, better? And so that's the piece of where we're going to hopefully go next in terms of talking about liberation, because it definitely has to do with how are you going to free up whatever life you have to accommodate all of the things that you've brought to this life so far, you know?
Can you say that again? How are you going to free up? Go ahead.
How are you going to free up the life that you have now? So, there are all kinds of things that we go through as we get older, whether it is, family stuff or, preparing financially, your financial structure, your life structure, all of this health. But inside of all of that, which is sort of the everyday mess of living, there's a space there that you could free up to bring that which you've lived all of this time to be part of this whole thing. So I have this theory about time, right? I have this theory that, and I don't know, I haven't confirmed it, but I have this weird theory that we live different lives at the same time. So we think about time as linear, but the more I experience life, I feel as though I'm living, that it's a time stamp and not a time. So while we're doing life, there's also more life to live. You know what I mean?
I
That
do.
yeah. So that freeing up the freeing freeing up that space so that we can live, even though we're living, part of the life is messy, right? Which is the everyday stuff of life. But part of that life has room in it, I think, to bring more stuff in and to explore more ideas and to just extend the valueness, if you will, of the life that you're living in these various spaces, in these various dimensions, if you will. That's why the whole thing about mind, body, spirit is about not separating these things. I have this t-shirt on, mind, body, spirit today. It's about not separate. We tend to silo things like, okay, this is the mind time, when we're going to school. This is the body time when we're taking care of our body. And this is spirit time when we're meditating or going to church or doing whatever. It's not siloed, it's all together. That's the integrated human,
And that these are Eurocentric conventions, right?
Yeah,
It's been
exactly.
separate.
Yeah, exactly. So to always be reminded of that, where we can make space for all of these things happening together, whether it is that our bodies might be, rebelling against us, for whatever reason. If we still have our mind active, then we can, work on all of these things together. But the part that I am trying to figure out is how to integrate all of these thoughts into something that I can actually work into my restorative justice practice.
I like it. I like it. And so when you think what connection is what is ringing to me in all of what you're saying. And when I'm thinking about this, let me see if I could put it in words, super visual person. And so I'm seeing and now I'm trying to translate what I'm seeing, but I probably won't do it justice, right? So even in thinking about how you conceptualize time, which I conceptualize time similarly and
Good.
increasingly so as I get older, right? So, and the title of that movie, Everywhere, but Everywhere, Everything, All at Once, kind of helps us into thinking about this, right? So the conceptualization of past and present helps us now in this timestamp to be able to organize social behavior. So you and I said today that we are going to meet at a certain time. So it helped us, this timestamp helped us to organize our social behavior. But in reality, our past is happening at the same time as our future, as the same time as the present, as well as we are multidimensional. So our past lives, if we believe in past lives, and our future lives are also occurring at the same time. So
That's
what
right.
you're doing in any one point and instance is affecting all of the cells. The individual within that lifetime, and then across various lifetimes, and then another dimension deeper across generations too, across our ancestry behind us and before us, right? And so
That's
I, as, yeah. So as I'm seeing that, I'm just seeing like this thread of connection that holds it all together, that is seemingly disparate because we've been socialized to think that way. And then I'm also thinking of what you said about mind, body, spirit, and also just seeing connection, right? Just also seeing that this is so nicely actually seen together, but we've been socialized out of that thinking. And I'm also applying it now to restorative justice and community. If we are all connected and all one in all those in all those ways. And we could get deeper with this conversation and thinking about how your multiple selves and multiple time points and mine in the same space and, and what have you. But just thinking about community and our connectedness and us all being one, and how that's central, because
That's
it's a value system, what you're saying too. Like, it was your original value system, so this work matched who you were.
If you enjoy listening to Radical Remembering and would love to get the season drop before everyone else, if you want exclusive invites to live and virtual events and could benefit from daily liberation inspiration, like affirmations, thought-provoking questions, and daily guidance, then download our free app, Living Liberated, in the App Store or on Google Play. You can also find the link below in the description box.
Exactly. And so what, you know, the thing about narrative in Nubia is that we're coming into the recognition of these principles that are our original value system.
Yeah.
This Africanized way of thinking,
yeah,
about who we are to each other. And then, you know, really taking a good look of, oh, who are we to other people? And so making sure that we understand that you are not going to tell me who I am. I'm going to say to myself who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. The thing about, you know, integration is that it's always happening, because we always, you know, trying to figure out, okay, who is this self? What am I learning from this self? So we always in touch with these selves. It's just that we becoming more attuned to it.
Yeah.
In community spaces like this, where we actually sort of challenging, you know, ideas and challenging each other to think more deeply. And this is what is causing all of the pushback and backlash in the society right now.
Right.
Because it's not about waking up. It's we were never sleeping. It's not about waking up. It's about remembering.
Exactly.
Making sure that we understand that we are members of a community that needs reing, you know.
Yes.
So bringing us back, always bringing ourselves back, and always bringing us back in community with each other, because we've been intentionally separated, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, when I think of all of the ways that we've been separated as African people in the diaspora, on the continent, I mean, it's just tragic. And
yeah.
So this remembering of our original principles, which we studying in Narrative of Nubia, is just a blessing, because it's like,
yeah,
it's like, you know, opening up different portals now.
Mm-hmm.
For us to really, you know, really see, oh, okay, yes, this is happening. This is really happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can imagine that just as the backlash is taking place with DEI now,
yeah,
there's going to be that same thing once it is recognized that restorative justice, this buzz term,
yeah,
is a thing. Even just as how people don't understand what CRT is and they gaslight, you know, it's going to happen. But what I'm hoping is that restorative justice can be taken inside,
yeah,
and not be performed outside.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think the foundation of my work is in restorative justice, trying to make sure that these seeds are planted wherever I do the work. Make sure I'm making sure that these seeds are planted so that they can grow inside. And by the time people who want to cancel, you know, the movement,
yeah,
realize that it's a thing that they want to cancel, roots have taken hold.
Yeah, I agree. You know what I think? Years ago, and this is funny because this is maybe the second time I'm remembering and talking about this week, but years ago, it was 2016 when I was applying for my faculty position at NYU. And I did a talk that was diversity related, focused on intersectionality and us understanding our social location, how that impacts how we see the world and different things like that. And someone in the audience asked me a question because Trump was running, and they were like, "Well, what do you think about this?" Because we were seeing how much support Trump really had. And, you know, and at that time I was like, "Oh, yeah, he's not gonna win." But little did I know, right? But what I said then, and I still hold to years later, almost 7 years, well, 7 years later, what I still hold to is that I feel like it's a purge. Right. So you know, I'm sure you know, like when you were taking boiling some herbs to take a purge or a healing, and then everything ugly comes out. So you get boils on your skin, bumps and all those kind of things, have to use the bathroom because it's purging and it's detoxifying. I feel like where we are in the collective is in the detoxification stage. I also feel like this has been a developmental process, right? So the work of the civil rights era, it's relatively recent. I mean, I don't want to say it so that it provides an excuse, but it's relatively recent given the larger context of time and given the history of that period of enslavement. It's still relatively recent. So it's almost like in its adolescence, right? And so in its adolescence, lots of unpredictable things happen in adolescence, like hormonal changes
Yes.
and all sorts of chaos before it coalesces into this mature adult, right? So in my conceptualization or the way that I see things, I feel like this is the worst, and it is intentionally so at a collective and spiritual level, because then it makes people, so we're going to have people who dig their heels in as staunchly as they are and act as desperately as they are with trying to do away with critical race theory, diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's absurd, right? And they're acting that staunchly, digging their heels in. But then you have a whole other collective whose eyes weren't open and thinking about these things at all. And we're like, wait, what? And then they're like, and it makes them like, wait, what world do we live in? And asking that question, getting the answers so that they can turn in the direction of kind of like cultivating the awareness that you and I are talking about. So I feel like ultimately, as disgusting a period as this is, and I am 100% an optimist, so you might be
I
listening
know.
and thinking, okay, this Pollyanna, but I think that where we're moving, I think that we are at a tipping point in the collective, and that where we're moving is out of these systems of domination. And I can also situate that in a planetary understanding, in that Pluto, the planet of like destruction and everything like that, is now in Aquarius. I mean, it'll return back to Capricorn before it goes into Aquarius, seeding changes for the age of Aquarius, which is, in time to come, but a humanitarian age where there will be more equity and equality and all those kinds of things.
I love that, and I'm so you give me hope because that. So what I'm thinking is that this. So Martin Luther King quoted this famous line: "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice." And then former Attorney General Eric Holder said, "But it is we who have to pull it toward justice. It will bend, but it will bend so slowly that by the time it gets there, things have deteriorated so much that there's much more work to be done." So the people who are working on pulling this arc, have that responsibility to pull harder because this change. First of all, it may not happen in this era, right? Because when we talk about time, we don't know how the cosmos thinks about time. Life is such a drop, a little, but in terms of when and how to measure time, it's going to happen, and then it might shift again, so that another generation has to do this work all over again. Because if you look at how many times the same kind of thing happened, it's kind of like it goes around, it comes around, it happened, so the era of the civil rights movement was one of the times when that arc was being pulled, and then now we have the backlash, so we have to pull it again, and then we're going to enjoy, hopefully, probably not in my lifetime, this era of perhaps some peace and prosperity and wholeness, but then it's going to shift again because that's the nature of the human being, unfortunately.
Yeah, I pray
So
that it's
I'm
different.
optimistic, but I'm also looking at history and how, we've been talking about transmutation for thousands of years,
Can you say more about transmutation?
What transmutation is, in the days of antiquity, there was much more of an attunement to what we now call magic. In other words, using forces to create passages in time that are complementary to the type of people who are living at that time and need it. Like for instance, in Kemet, right? And so we've lost a lot of that Hecate or magic, as Dr. Beatty was just talking about in the lesson today. We've lost a lot of that, and a lot of it has been removed intentionally from our experience and our memories. So we've not just lost it; it's been stolen, it's been taken away, and we are now, I guess, transmuting what is still deposited in our genes into something that we now have to birth into the present reality, which is it would it. So this is why we see in all of this movement in terms of, peace work and DEI and all of these things that people are now getting sort of awakened to, right? And then you're seeing the backlash in terms of, okay, no, this we not can't allow people to realize what we've been doing. We gotta suppress this and keep them in chains, So, but it does it never stops. It always comes out, gets stripped away, gets exploited. Who knows what the next iteration will be in terms of how it will be, changed or removed or whatever. But we can't stop working at it. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, I agree. I'm thinking a lot of things. Let me see. What promise do you think, because after the murder of George Floyd, when people were saying defund the police, and they were people who thought it was like madness, like, wait, what? Like, what are you talking about? And my thought was like, actually, like, we weren't operating with police systems. And I believe, as Maladoma Patrice Somme says in, I can't remember which book, if it was Ritual, Healing Wisdom of Africa, or one of the book he books, he was saying that the he can know when a community is sick when it has police, because the community itself is supposed to be the one who is regulating itself. And if we have connectedness with each other, then, and I've seen it in small environments too, right? So Trinidad is it's not big. It's not big, but it's bigger. It's relatively big compared to Grenada. So when I go to Grenada, where my husband is from, I'm able to see the power of community in a different way. The population is about 113,000 now, right? When we leave the house, everybody knows everybody, and if they don't recognize them physically, when we're someplace, my husband could easily say, "I'm such and such's son," right? And they would know who he is. And so with this sense of connectedness, if I know Marva, Miss Marva from up the street, and if I know Marva's son from down the block, I could never do Marva's son wrong, because I know it would ultimately hurt Marva, and our families are connected, right? So having community, so it's because we've been so socialized to think reactively. They're like, oh my God, no, we need a police system. But if we thought preventively, and we had community building, if we weren't so individualistic, and we had community building as a value, I don't think we would need the police in the ways in which we have them. What are your thoughts?
Right, and we would police ourselves. That's the whole thing. The
Yes.
whole thing is that. So, for instance, the example that you used. When I was a child, we didn't have telephones.
Yeah.
If I did something in the schoolyard or around the school before I got home, my father knew about it. How did he know? We don't have telephone. Nobody had a telephone to call him to tell him, but he would be waiting on the step for me. So, you know what I mean? How did he know? It's that they had a way
Yeah.
of relaying, okay, run down the street and tell Miss Agatha to go next door and tell Miss Fiona to run by the thing and tell Mr. Hamill that his daughter acting up in school. Okay.
Yeah.
So they had, and
And
they had their way of communicating. So by the time I got home, so everybody was looking out, not just for you,
yes.
but also to make sure that you were held accountable if you did anything wrong.
Yeah.
They did not care if my father used the belt, if he used the words, if he used the global whip or whatever it is,
Yeah.
but they know that if we don't, keep this child
Yeah.
accountable, we don't want her to grow up like weeds, so
Yeah.
everybody, the whole village is looking out for to make sure that you don't harm anybody, you don't harm yourself, and you don't get harmed.
Yeah.
Liberation is 100% about being in right relationship with our power. It's so easy from day to day to disconnect from our source and forget who we really are. On our app, Living Liberated, we have the tools to keep you plugged in. You'll find a library of affirmations, guided meditations, guided journeys, and tapping sequences to keep you in a state of alignment with who you really are. Topics range from self-love, healthy relationships, activating our DNA, to guided journeys with your ancestors. Download our free app, Living Liberated, and start your free 7-day trial now in the App Store or Google Play. You can also find the link for Plugged in the description box below.
Yeah, it reminds me. So I'm smiling because it does. My grandmother would tell stories like that too. There was a Miss Maybe on her block. Like, so if something happened in school, Miss Maybe would beat her. Miss this one would give her a pat, and this one, and she got home and she was still getting beat,
Right.
right? And so what I hear in that story, what I hear in your story, when I think about the individual body, because it's the micro is the macro, it's one and the same, is that systems have a way of self-correcting, right?
Yeah.
So body as a system, when it is unbalanced, when there is sickness, if provided the proper context, then it can find its way back to balance and it can find its way back to health. Similarly, the community has self-righting, systems in place to bring it back as well. And so that's one of the, and I'm not saying, because I'm not saying some people will hear that and be like, see, they're saying I'm beating, right? That's not what we're saying at all. We're saying that whether it's a self-correcting system, you know what I mean, that everybody in the community is so connected that everybody is involved. It also makes me think of, it's different but similar, this concept of the self and how individualistic the concept of the self here in the West is. I was interviewing my grandmother. I was doing a study when I was in grad school where I wanted to explore, it's actually published too, I wanted to explore resilience, but I was very interested in the cultural context of the development of mental health and help-seeking behaviors. Still very interested in that, right? And so I interviewed my grandmother to get one Trinidadian woman's perspective, right? And so I was asking her about what are the things that she did for like everyday coping and different things like that. And so everything I ask of we, right? So me in my bicultural frame, both Trinidadian and American, was still like, well, no, what did you do, right? And there was no, she was defaulting to a we, like there was no conceptualization of an I. Not to say that there's no conceptualization. Conceptualization is not the same. Well, and she was saying that because she's been cooking since she's 8 years old, right? How did she develop that? This one used to bring over the peas and this one used to bring over the rice. And if this one had a little extra beef, they brought it. And then she, push a chair to the stove and she would begin to practice and cook. And these are all the neighbors, right? And so this development of this conceptualization of the we, so that I can't harm the we because the we is me.
And they all depended on each other. That's the thing. I have this thing behind me. If I can just come out of a screen view, and if I can just show it, I will. Let me see if I can, because I have to. I wanted to.
I think if you go to the little arrow next to stop video where it says, and you can go up to blur my background and take it off.
Okay. All right. Yeah. There you go. Okay, so I have this. I don't know if you can see it behind me.
Is
This
Is
is
that
a
the market scene with the woman?
no, it's a baking scene. It's a mud oven.
Oh, I have that. I have
You
that.
have that?
Yeah.
Right. Where all of the neighbors bring their bread to be
Yeah.
baked in this neighborhood mud oven. And you know, the picture, I love looking at it because it shows that, you know, the community comes together
Yeah.
because they need each other. You know, this is where the bakery is, right? The person who is doing the actual baking. I mean, the whole technology is just wonderful. But
Yeah.
she has a little girl next to her who is kind of like the apprentice, and she's with her hand on her hip and she's kind of looking on. And no doubt the lady who is doing the baking is talking to her all this time and telling her what she's doing. So she's probably explaining why she's using the banana leaf to hold the bread and the paddle to take it out, and probably telling her why the fire has to be underneath, and you know, all of this stuff. And then all of this scene is going on around them. So there's little boys playing marble and they're pitching around here. You know, there's somebody waiting. This gentleman probably is somebody's husband who brought the dough to be baked. So he's waiting on it. The whole scene just talks to me about how community works,
Yes.
where people get together based on the idea that we are dependent on each other, right? And that we cannot harm each other if we depend on each other to keep the community safe
Yeah.
and together, you
Yeah.
know. So it just makes me, you know, remember the kinds of values that we had that we lost, you know.
Yes. 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 So true. I was sharing with my class this morning about a study of social cognition, right? Social cognition meaning that the social environment directs how we think about things, right? It shapes how we think about things. So in this particular study, mind you, this is years ago, maybe about 15 years ago, this was published, right? But in a particular study, they had Chinese, if I believe it was Chinese participants, as well as they had white American participants, and they showed them pictures and they asked them to describe a picture. The white American, where they would say, "Oh, okay, I see Marva right there, right? You know, I see a person." They were more likely to describe the individual, right? The Chinese participants were more likely to describe the context. They were more likely not only so their cog the social cognition is so directed to community and to context and to collective that they would see the room first and describe it, and they might describe the picture behind you and the light, and you are a person in the room rather than the central feature of it, right? That is huge when we think of one, the fact that culture does shape how we think, right? So we can't deny that too. But in our ability to even see and develop community, if we are trained in an individualist lens, and that's why we have to remember, that's why we have to come back and retrain and come back to ourselves, as you were saying earlier.
And that brings me to the other part of this movement, which is transformative justice, which is actually describing how communities take back their power to regulate themselves and to heal themselves, as opposed to relying on authority figures and punitive authority figures like the police to come in and police them. So there was a story a few months ago now, I think, about a community in Brownsville in Brooklyn. And it was in the New York Times, where the black men of the community said to the police, give us I think it was a week or something like it wasn't a whole, I don't think it was a whole month. It was either a week or a few days. Give us this time, you all don't come around, and let us police our own community. And so what they did was they were patrolling, right, monitoring. And before anything, they looked, because they knew the kids in the community. They knew them. They knew how they could tell by the way they were moving, you know, that something was about to happen. They were up to some mischief or something. And they would interrupt that there. And notice the word that I'm using, interrupt, not intervene. They would interrupt. In other words, they would go in and talk to these kids and say, what are you up to? What's happening? Why did you know you if you continue with that, next thing you know, you're fighting. Come, stop that. What and engage them in some kind of activity that would bring them back to themselves, right? Before something jumps up. As opposed to waiting until, as opposed to be to not being part of the community, coming in and intervening when something has already happened, and then using a kind of punitive approach to punish something that could have been probably done differently, that like these black men were doing. So this they and so the police were not far off, but they were not in uniform. They were, sort of mixing without being seen in plain clothes, because these gentlemen, if something did happen, they had no powers of arrest or anything like that. And also they didn't want to, they want to make sure that, they wouldn't cause any more harm. So they had complete confidence that they knew the community enough that they would be able to interrupt things before things actually jumped off. And that happened. No, nothing happened for that whole time. No crime, no mischief, no nothing, right? And so they made the point that, you see, we can, if given the opportunity, manage and police our own community. You don't have to come in, you know what I mean? And so, but it was great. I mean, Brownsville is a, is an, it seems like it's an exceptional kind of place where people are actually willing to try these kinds of experiments.
Well, I mean, but Brownsville and like it used to be very high crime in the 80s and 90s and stuff like that too. When you say, so when you're sharing this story, in my early days as a social worker, when I used to have to, I'm just laughing because it's so true. When I used to have to go to my clients' houses, right? And I went to homes everywhere in the projects, or, different things. And so, I mean, I grew up between Brooklyn and Long Island. So for me, there was nothing ever raised in me like, oh my God, this is dangerous. This is not. I remember being at work and people were like, oh, you went into those houses. And I'm like, yeah, they're people, but they knew to talk about how self-regulating they were as a community. When I didn't realize they were watching me, they knew who I was, they knew where I was going, they knew around when I came or whatever. And I used to be in plain clothes, right? So one day I was going into a building. The guy was like, oh, they're not there today, miss. And I'm looking at him I'm like, he knew where I'd never seen him before, but clearly he had seen me. And not only had he seen me, he knew where I was going and that they weren't here. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm just gonna check, right? And basically they weren't home, right? Point of the story is they're, he had eyes for the
Yeah,
community.
that's
He was
right.
helping. He was super respectful to me too. You know
Right.
what I mean? Like they're not there, miss. And so, I know when I've seen firsthand what you're saying too. And that's even without an intended effort. That was just a spontaneous action of a community member. So I really like that.
Yeah, and they use there are many sort of aspects of this transformative justice taking place in various communities. We just don't hear about it. The term interrupter is actually a term that's used when crime has taken place, and there are trusted messengers in the community who will go to, like, for instance, I just moved from Albany, and when I was living in Albany, I had a colleague who I worked with, a community colleague who I worked with in very many instances for some years now. He and I worked together on various things in the community, and because I was director of community outreach at Albany Medical College, so as part of my job, I would be doing these kinds of work, this kind of work with these different kinds of people who were working in the community, community activists and different things that don't even have labels anymore, right? But he was somebody who would they would call to go to the hospital, the emergency room, when somebody got shot, when a usually a young person, because he would stop things from going further. Because there's all this thing about revenge, and things can just keep going on and on and on without any interruption. And he was an interrupter who would actually be called when something happened to go to the person who was harmed, right? to sit with them and try to find out what's going on in their mind and see if they, and this was a lay person, but with so much experience in the community that he was able to sort of make connections before things happen that probably would cause a problem. And then he would be able to say, okay, you know, this is not going to make sense if you're thinking of this because here's why and so on, right? And how many people, how far this could go and the ripple effect and if you know, and all of this. And so it's just so layered, the kind of skills that community,
Yes, rich, rich skills.
rich skills that community has. Why not use these skills in these communities to, no, I don't like the word empower, but to liberate them, right? To be able to manage their own communities would be so much better. So transformative justice, which is what I'm very interested in doing, is helping bring these talents together in communities so that they can actually work on their own, you know, marronage, if you will, you know, move themselves away from this punitive attitude of policing to much more of a restorative way of managing their community.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. It just makes me think about what a deficit perspective. Well, first of all, we know that police in the United States was only started to catch, quote unquote, runaway slaves, right? And so if I mean right there, I mean there's nothing more and nothing less than you said that it has a impure foundation, right? But then as it's continued or the justification of it, it's based on a deficit perspective to think that people cannot regulate themselves, that a group of people cannot regulate themselves. In Cuba, I went to Cuba, the police didn't have, not even, they didn't have, oh, very few had guns, right? Very few even had batons, right? Because there's a culture of community where people are. And the thing about that too, right? In the United States, they'll say, oh, there's more violence in lower income areas. First, I mean, that's not, they don't have a recognition of the ways in which these areas have been intentionally impoverished. But it's not that as much as it is the inequitable distribution, right? Because if you don't have a social comparison group, then you don't have poverty. Similarly, in the same interview, when I was talking to my grandmother, I was asking, well, how did poor people quote? And her answer was, did it have poor? I don't know. Yeah, because everybody was poor, you know what I mean? And everybody
We
was
didn't know we were poor.
exactly. And so the if we move away from this deficit mentality and believe that people are capable of guiding their own lives as well as communities are capable of moving the community, then we don't have, then we don't think that we have the need for a policing system, at least the policing system as it exists today. Because one, we could spend money other ways. We could spend money developing transformative justice interventions, which were
Actually,
naturally happening anyway,
yeah,
right?
exactly.
Yeah, and other prevention and community services and social work and different things like that.
And people need, I mean, people need things to live. People there, you know, you need stuff to live. And when that stuff is not available and people lose hope and people don't feel as though they have worth,
Yeah.
you know, then, you know, all kinds of things happen. When, you know, there's a story, the same colleague of mine told me once that right when COVID was kind of ripe and you know, we were still trying to find a vaccine, he was walking past a basketball court and, you know, everybody else was inside, but this group of young men were playing basketball and they, you know, jumping on each other and no mask or nothing like that. And he's like, you know, there's a pandemic, right? And they said, you know what they said? We're gonna die before we turn 21 anyway. What's the point? We're gonna die soon anyway. Might as well enjoy life. That kind of loss of hope, what do you say to that? You know what I mean? What do you say to people who, because they've been treated as though they have no worth, to the society. They have nothing to contribute, and they're less than human. They're only expected to, to be problems. What do you say to them? They've already internalized the fact that they're not going to live. Either somebody gonna get them, or they're gonna go to jail, or that's their life. And he was telling me this, and it brought tears to my eyes, because I have a son and two grandsons. I'm like, oh my God, black men, black boys are losing hope. So it's very, the work of any kind of work that we're doing that can, just make people human again is necessary.
Yeah, so I'm shaking my head because make human people human again, right? Like we have so much to undo. You know what I mean? Like it's like just crazy that we have to just remember like the major task that we have is to remember our humanity. You know what I mean? To remember what we had in our indigenous communities because of these ugly forces of colonization and capitalism, imperialization, and all those domination systems of
These all these
domination.
isms,
Yeah, exactly.
and it creates such a toxic culture, as Dr. Gabor Maté says, is an expert in trauma, who talks about this toxic culture that you shouldn't be surprised when the toxic culture breeds toxic people. So, people who are dealing with trauma are, you want to know what happened to them, and not, you know what I mean? And not trying to, make them victims. But so it's a very, all of that is helping me to understand, how much communities can transmute and transform themselves by understanding that, yes, we in this toxic brew, but there are ways to detoxify ourselves so that we don't continue to be toxic in this brew. And hopefully by doing that, because people are the thread of the community, hopefully now heal the community. And so there's a lot of promise for restorative justice and transformative justice if we remember that we used to do this before.
And we not try
This is
to
the origins are it from Indigenous people. So the First Nations people, this is, they don't call it restorative justice. That's just how they live.
And I was reading just this morning, I was like, of course I read this morning. I was reading it in Maladoma's book, Healing Wisdom of Africa, where he was talking about how it happens in the Dagara community of Burkina Faso. And it's the same thing. You know what I mean? The person who was harmed brings their grievance. So people sit in a circle and everybody is facing each other in this circle. And then there's an outer circle where people who were like less directly involved are also facing each other in the circle. The person who was harmed in the center saying without blame, but really focusing on impact, what the offender, for lack of a better word, did. And then the person who is now wanting to come back into right relationship with is responding based on the impact, not defending, based on the impact. And that's how we come back into right relationship. You know, my conceptualization, and I'm sure you probably noticed it in hearing any of the things that I say, that my conceptualization of liberation is very much based on a restorative justice frame. So how I think about liberation, for those who have not heard me say this, is that it's about coming back into right relationship with our power, right? So even on the individual level, we've lost connection with ourselves and we're not in right relationship with ourselves. And so we come back into right relationship with ourselves and balance this, and we experience internalized justice. If multiple individuals' points and lights of consciousness are experiencing internalized justice, we have a world where there is justice, and that is the norm on the macro level based on the experiences of the many within that system.
And I think of it as personal marronage. You have to actually run away the way that people are putting you in spaces to think the way that everybody else is thinking. Because if you if because the distraction is the outer life, the reality is the inner life. And so coming, I call it marinage because you can do this while people are looking and they don't even know what you're doing. You know, you're doing your own inner work. They will see hopefully the fruits of that, but you don't have to, it doesn't have to be broadcast and all this, or it doesn't have to be, you don't have to do it in a way where people are like looking at you. I keep saying I'm from to the day that I transition, I'm going to be learning, because I consider this a school. I consider that this is an earth school. And so I can't, be resting on, I can't be resting on any laurels. Even though I'm a lazy person and I love to just daydream and do nothing and read and just be, still the work is just percolating, percolating, percolating in inside.
And I would even say that you're not lazy. You are rightly in balance with your divine femininity and just being and creating and what have you.
And using rest as resistance.
So you do consulting. What kind
Yeah.
of consulting do you do, and how can people find out more about you as a consultant?
So I usually work on a team of practitioners who we're doing a lot of training these days. So I work in high-ed spaces, medical institutions, because it's restorative justice is kind of like a new thing in the medical institutions. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine the kind of transformation that will take place if faculty understanding what kinds of harm, and if doctors are understanding what kind of harm that they can be doing to patients, and also trainees who are becoming doctors, so that to make sure that, because one of the most harmful places is in the medical profession. You know,
I can imagine.
healthcare harms people like crazy. And so we're doing a lot of work in training people in the medical schools to practice restorative justice and to train others, higher ed as well. So I'm doing a lot of training, and the training consists of just giving people an overview of the three tiers of restorative justice, which is the community building, which is the big piece, because as I said, sort of regularizing this toxic society and this toxic environment that we're in. And then the second tier is the conferencing, which is when harm has been done, to be able to bring people together to repair that harm. And then the third tier is the reintegration, bringing people back after a period of absence, so that things are, coming back to whole again. And so I'm doing training now. I do really want to work in communities where there is the need for building community, so that the prevention of harm will take place, as opposed to waiting until harm happens. But if that is a need where there's need to bring people together to have conversations about it, and calling people back instead of calling people out, calling people back to accountability and to repair, and creating spaces where people can work again, instead of getting rid of them, because we can't lose anybody. We humans are so valuable, and that's kind of the way that I'm working right now.
Love it, love it. So as usual, we will have in the description box below how you all can get in touch with Marva if you needed to. Do you have any closing words for our audience?
I just feel that, we are in a space right now, as you said earlier, that we are in this time stamp where a lot of this is happening. This kind of realization that there is more to be done in terms of reintegrating society. And I just want to make sure that people understand that a lot of people doing this work, people doing work on themselves, and that we all have to do it. It doesn't have to be Black people, white people. First of all, white people need to do it.
Oh,
probably more
absolutely.
so,
Yes.
right? And there should be no resistance in terms of what will take place if we dismantle some of these barriers. It's going to redound to the better situation for all of us, because if the, as I said before, if the environment is toxic, we're going to breed toxic people. We're going to continue to breed toxic people. So just like NIMBYism, if you don't want people who look like somebody else in the back in living near to you, well, where are they going to live? If they, you know what I mean? But if we get to know each other and we get to understand how we all are human, we all have all of these things in common that we can work with, then we can live together. Then, so that's the message.
Good. So thank you so much for this rich and engaging discussion.
Thank you for having me. I'm so grateful.
Thanks for listening. If you've loved what we've had to share and want to be the first to get releases of our new episodes and learn about events, download our free app, Living Liberated, in the Apple or Google Play Store.